This time, let me invite you to turn to the prophecy according to Daniel, Daniel chapter 6.
Again, a longer portion of reading related to the narrative. This may be the most well-known story of Daniel. And so, as it is familiar to you, still hear it with freshness, for this is the Word of God. Daniel chapter 6, we begin at verse 1. It seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, that they would be in charge of the whole kingdom, and over them three commissioners, of whom Daniel was one, that these satraps might be accountable to them, and that the king might not suffer loss. Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and satraps, because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, and the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. Then the commissioners and satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs, but they could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption, inasmuch as he was faithful, and no negligence or corruption was to be found in him. Then these men said, "We will not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it again against him with regard to the law of his God." And then these commissioners and satraps came by agreement to the king and spoke to him as follows. "King Darius, live forever. All the commissioners of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the high officials and the governors have consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days shall be cast into the lion's den. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it may not be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which may not be revoked." Therefore, King Darius signed the document that is the injunction. Now when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. Now in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem. And he continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God, as he had been doing previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. And then they approached and spoke before the king about the king's injunction. "Did you not sign an injunction? Any man who makes a petition and to any god, or to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days is to be cast into the lion's den?" The king replied, "The statement is true, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which may not be revoked." Then they answered and spoke before the king, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction which you signed, but keeps making his petition three times a day." Then, as soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed, and he set his mind on delivering Daniel. And even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, "Recognize, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and the Persians that no injunction or statute which the king establishes may be changed." Then the king gave orders, and Daniel was brought in and cast into the lion's den. The king spoke and said to Daniel, "Your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you." A stone was brought and laid over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signet rings of his nobles, so that nothing would be changed in regard to Daniel. And then the king went off to his palace, and he spent the night fasting, and no entertainment was brought before him, and his sleep fled from him. And then the king arose at dawn, at the break of day, and he went in haste to the lion's den. When he had come near the den to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice, The king spoke and he said to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lions? And then Daniel spoke to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me, inasmuch as I was found innocent before him. And also toward you, O king, I have committed no crime. Then the king was very pleased and gave orders for Daniel to be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he had trusted his God. The king then gave orders, and they brought those men who had maliciously accused Daniel, and they cast them, their children, and their wives into the lion's den. And they had not reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Then Darius the king wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language who were living in all the land, May your peace abound. I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and enduring forever, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his dominion will be forever. He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has also delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel enjoyed success in the reign of Darius, in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. This ends the reading of God's holy and infallible word. May he bless it to our hearing this day. Maybe the name Athanasius is familiar to you, or maybe not. Athanasius was a 4th century bishop of Alexandria in Egypt. He is a primary example of a Christian who is willing to die as a witness for Christ. Though he was never called by God to be a martyr, he contended against strong error in the church, the kind of error that would forever take the church away from Christ. And that error was called Arianism. It was a false teaching that stated that Jesus was not divine, but rather he was simply a created being. According to Arius, the founder of this false doctrine, there was a time when the Son was not. And that is a lie. This was a very important, popular doctrine. It was influencing many in his day. In fact, there was a whole council of churchmen who met in Nicaea in 325, and they declared Arianism to be false, and they affirmed the biblical teaching that the Son is of the same essence, the same divine essence with the Father, that he is fully God. But the controversy had not ended with Nicaea. One commentator of that council and Athanasius' involvement at the council, he tells a quick story that at the fever point of the controversy, when the current appeared to be running strongly against the Orthodox school, a certain delegate went to Athanasius and he said to him, You're fighting a losing battle. Does Athanasius not know that the whole world is against him? In which Athanasius said quietly, Is the world against Athanasius? Well, then Athanasius is against the world. Athanasius contra mundum. Athanasius would become a bishop 3 years later, and he would struggle his whole life against the popularity of Arianism in Alexandria. Even the emperor, Constantine, grew sympathetic to Arianism. But Athanasius refused to admit Arians even into the church. And various emperors banished him 5 times from the land. Despite this threat to his life and work, Athanasius would not give in to the false doctrine. And today we celebrate Athanasius with the phrase, Athanasius contra mundum, Athanasius against the world. Well, he's just one example of many. And today in our text, we see another figure who lived long before Athanasius, and who was also against the world. Daniel. We want to be really careful here. We don't, as the church, promote the idea that at its core, Christianity is supposed to be against the world. That's not even the primary teaching of Christianity. Rather, we understand that in the world, there are institutions that are against Christ and His gospel. They campaign to establish a kingdom that is void of God and His Word and His people. Therefore, those who are associated with Jesus, who live in allegiance to Jesus, these are resisted by the enemies of God. And if you've been a Christian for any amount of time, you know how challenging it is to live in this world against your own heart, but also against those currents in our society that actually push against Christianity. You know what it is to resist the winds of change. You know what it is to speak, possibly, against the popular opinion that is against God. But there is a lesson in our text today, and that lesson, though it is simple, it is profound and significant. Here's the lesson. It is better to trust in God than to obey men. It is better to trust in God than to obey men. And so you need this text today. We can admit that we in America are not persecuted to any degree close to Christians in other parts of the world. We're not pressured by deadly threats to deny Jesus. There are not lions' dens waiting to be opened to have us thrown in. Instead, in America, you are flooded and overwhelmed by a more subtle challenge, a persecution. By hostility and peer pressure, you are pushed to conform to the ways of this world. And yet, this text provides the relevant courage and faith that is needed to weather even the storm that we have before us as Christians. We want to look at 4 points to help move us through our text today. We want to look at the satraps against Daniel. We want to look at the law of the land against Daniel. We want to look at the lion's den against Daniel. And we want to look at, finally, one who is for Daniel. So with that, let us turn our attention to our first point, the satraps against Daniel. And this takes up the portion of verses 1 through 9. In verses 1 and 2, we see that King Darius, who was just introduced to us in the last chapter, became emperor of the land at the age of 62. And here Darius shows that he is reorganizing the structure of the empire. He has set these 120 satraps or governors over all of the regions of the empire. And the main job of these satraps is not merely to govern, but actually they're responsible for collecting the tribute or the tax that will fund the continuance of the empire. That these 120 satraps answer to 3 commissioners. They are accountable, it says in the text, to them to make sure that the king doesn't suffer any loss. That is, they are to make sure that these satraps are not stealing from the emperor. And so we see the first thing, there's 2 big principles highlighted in these satraps being against Daniel. And the first one is this, that we see Daniel's character is distinguished from all of the satraps, all of the high officials, the governors, as well as the other 2 commissioners that he serves with. In verse 4, he is noted to be an honest man, trustworthy, reliable. You know, things that are often missing from magistrates. There's no evidence of corruption. There's no negligence of duty regarding government affairs. He is blameless. He's the kind of man that not only would you want to be a magistrate, but the emperor wants to be a magistrate because of his fairness even to those who have authority over him. And we see why he has such character. There's nothing praiseworthy in Daniel in and of himself, but rather verse 3 tells us that he possessed an extraordinary spirit. Or rather, we might say that the Spirit of God possessed Daniel. And so Daniel has the grace of God and the mercy of God poured out upon him. Daniel was helped by the Spirit of God. And this is not the first time we see this. The Spirit of God is actually elevated and brought to the forefront in the book of Daniel time and again. Here is the Spirit working in his Old Testament saints. And therefore, by the Spirit, Daniel walked by faith and he sought to glorify God in his occupation. Immediately, it brings a point of application to us, doesn't it? How do you carry yourself in your work? Whether you are at home and caring for the children, or whether you are in your own office or have started your own business, or whether you are working at a public area, do you carry yourself by faith? Do you carry yourself as one who seeks to glorify God in all things? Not just when your boss is watching, but when only God sees. Daniel didn't use excuses in his life, though it would seem to many of us that he had them. This foreign oppression and this unbelief that I have to serve under, it was not an excuse for Daniel to resist the king's authority. He obeyed every lawful command, and he did it with excellence. Daniel's age was not an excuse for him to neglect his duties. This extraordinary spirit is carrying him in extraordinary service. Daniel is in his 80s. By God's grace, he's able to still actively serve the king and country. Now, Daniel's service was done first unto the Lord. And that's why his service to king and country was biblically wise and biblically virtuous. So we see Daniel's character, and that actually enraged the satraps all the more. See, if they could find some flaw, then they could get him pressed under their thumb and they could manipulate and use him, just like politicians love to do at times. Some politicians, not all. But no, that's not the case. They have nothing to pin against Daniel. And so we see that these two other commissioners begin plotting with some satraps. And they want to accuse Daniel. They have no ground. And so they say in verse 5 that all we can do is find accusations against Daniel with regards to the law of his God. And here, as we're let into this conversation that takes place, this private, hidden conversation, we are actually let into the satanic scheme against the Lord's anointed. If God's enemies cannot find obvious fault with his people, they will go after your virtue. They will go after your virtue. In verses 6 to 8, they come before the king with flattering lips and a lying tongue, and they supposedly have this unanimous agreement. You see that language over and over again. In agreement they come, in agreement they come. But they even say that every single prefect and satrap and high official and governor and commissioner all together have consulted, and they want the exaltation of their new emperor. It's probably not all. These magistrates are spread across the whole empire. And later on, when they're thrown into the lion's den, it's not 120 households that are thrown into the lion's den. And so, most likely it is just a handful, but especially the two other commissioners. But we need to understand this is not just the scheme of these men. This is the scheme of the devil to pretend And this is what we see all the time, to pretend that his wicked plans are undisputed, that the majority of the world agrees with whatever his agenda is. Note, though, who is not present in this meeting. Probably the most important one, Daniel. Even if everyone did consent to such a plan, to such a law, not this man of integrity. He did not agree. He would never have agreed to such an unlawful command. The command is that none are to pray or to petition any god or man. What's going on here? It might sound weird, like we're just given kind of the summary. Why would the king fall for such a thing? It almost sounds like he's being anti-religious. Well, he's not. In the ancient Near Eastern world, the god would set his king over all the land and give his righteous law to everyone. And so what's actually being said here is this: O king, let the people recognize that you are the alone mediator between the empire and the gods, so that everyone has to come through you to God. That's really what's being put forth here. And this would establish the Medo-Persian Empire's dominance over all nations, peoples, languages, even gods. Access to all gods. We see here how easily pride puffs us up. Pride makes us feel more skilled than we are, more competent than we are, more intelligent, more important than we are. And so in verse 9, the king signs the document. He signs the decree. And now not even the king himself can revoke the law. It is set in stone. This law that you can't change, a law that's been put forth, it was actually a way to try and make the king very careful. You see, you only put into law the things that are irrevocable. Are you willing to let this be irrevocable? Then it can go into law. But Darius shows actually that he's not being careful, he's being careless. He's been duped. And now the contest arises between the law of God and the laws of the land. We need to appreciate that Darius was the greatest supporter of Daniel. But because this king is not devoted to God, the laws of the land actually become a threat to Daniel's faith. Christians, you must be careful regarding the favor of others. Yes, if someone shows you favor and it is not apparent or obvious that they're trying to deceive you, you should show people respect. Even if they are showing you favor and trying to deceive you and you're aware of it, you should show people respect. But we should not be deceived. We should not put our trust or our confidence in the favor of those who don't share our biblical values and our biblical principles and our biblical doctrines. We saw this with Nebuchadnezzar. In chapter 2, he's promoting Hananiah and Mishael and Azariah to high places in the land. And just in the next chapter, chapter 3, he's ready to throw them into the fiery furnace because they won't do his will. Jesus warned us about this in John 15. If the world hates you, you know that it has hated me before it hated you. If you're of the world would love its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, because of this, the world hates you. We can't hope for, put our confidence in people showing Christians favor, even in our own country. Daniel is not an experience uncommon to the Christian. Daniel 6. Daniel 6 is an example typical for servants of God. Well, that moves us from satraps being against Daniel to the law of the land against Daniel in verses 10 to 15. Look at verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house, Now in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem. And he continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God as he had been doing previously. Daniel did not decrease or hide his praying in light of this decree. He continued to be devoted unto the Lord. Whether he was favored by the king or threatened by the king. For Daniel's chief king sat upon the throne in heaven and he listened to his people. We want to note a few things about Daniel's prayer, because again, we see that when we find ourselves challenged or even hostility or peer pressure comes to us to separate us from God, there are many things here in Daniel's praying that we can take from and be encouraged by and even walk in. First, notice this, that in praying, Daniel remembered God and his word. It says he faced Jerusalem. Now that's very interesting because God had already declared that he had left the temple. Here was a place where his presence was and he had left the temple. But you see, Daniel was turning toward Jerusalem and he was remembering the former days of God's presence and he was praying that they would experience the same again. More than that, Daniel was actually obeying the word of God. If we were to look in 1 Kings chapter 8, we would read and hear Solomon's prayer as he dedicated the temple unto the Lord. And there's a portion in this prayer that's relevant to what we see in Daniel. In 1 Kings 8:46, God, when your people sin against you, and you are angry with them and deliver them to an enemy so that they take them away captive to the land of the enemy, far off or near, if they take thought in the land where they have been taken captive and repent and make supplication to you in the land of those who have taken them captive, and they say, we sinned and we've committed iniquity and we've acted wickedly. If they return to you with all their heart and with all their soul in the land of their enemies who have taken them captive and pray to you toward their land which you have given to their fathers, then hear their prayer and their supplication in heaven, your dwelling place, and maintain their cause, and forgive your people who have sinned against you and all their transgressions which they have transgressed against you. Make them objects of compassion before those who have taken them captive, that they may have compassion on them. You see, Daniel's not being superstitious here by facing Jerusalem 3 times a day. He's praying for the compassion of God, for the forgiveness of God, for the mercy of God, for the presence of God with his captive people. So Daniel remembered God. Also in praying, Daniel obeyed God, knowing the king's decree. Daniel's 3 friends were threatened because they refused to do something wrong. But Daniel is threatened for doing something right. And yet there is no pragmatism here. Daniel is not shrugging his shoulders saying, what can I do? It's the law. I can't pray to God anymore. See, our world pressures and even demands us to forget our God in a host of ways. Just consider today, the Sabbath day. What is competing with our worship of God? Our work, team sports, kids' parties, holidays, even community service projects. There may be extraordinary cases, and the scriptures make much room for those. We call those works of necessity and mercy. But I'm not speaking about those extraordinary cases. If we will not take a stand to trust God more than obey men, then we will miss out. Then we will miss out on all of the grace and the mercy and the peace and the communion that we have with God in worship. God's not imposing a law on you. He's saying, I want to spend time with you. I want to commune with you. I want to tell you of my love and forgiveness and have you to speak to me of your worship and your love. The Sabbath day is a means of grace. And we need to appreciate this then, that Daniel's fight was not trusting God when he was thrown into the den of the lions. Daniel's fight was praying to God, though he could be thrown into the den of the lions. He chose now to get on his knees and to submit himself and to humble himself and to worship this God, because God's honor and God's worship matter more than my life and my security. That sounds radical. I know. But here's a question to help you as you wrestle through the truth of this. What is your life without the worship of God? What is your life without God? What is your life without His Word? What is your life without communing with Him and hearing from Him? It is sin. It is misery. It is distraction. It is death. Well, we learn also that in praying, Daniel not only remembered God and he not only honored God and worshiped God, he continued in his devotion to God, not out of crisis, but out of habit. He kneeled to demonstrate his attitude of humility and reverence. One day, every knee will bow before this God. And so Daniel takes the posture of the last day, now. He prayed three times a day to demonstrate his dependency on God and desire to commune with Him often. This is not a rule, by the way, we have to be careful. This is not a rule that we need to pray three times a day. But you need to ask yourself, do you really desire to commune with God if you're not coming to Him daily? If a husband lets a day go by without communing with his wife, except for those extraordinary circumstances, we would say there must be a problem with this relationship.
He was prepared to pray in crisis because he learned to pray in comfort.
Well, we see that Daniel is contested against. This is what he's doing. He's going to his God in the midst of this law being a threat to him. And we see that the trappers have Daniel. They have him trapped in his prayer. It's interesting that though they think he's trapped by praying, it's the very petitions and supplications that will gain God's hearing, that will strengthen and increase his own faith and gratitude in God, and that will encourage him to trust God in the lion's den. One commentator says that God's purpose was not to save Daniel from trials, but to save Daniel through trials. We see the tricky conspirators. You notice they didn't first accuse Daniel. They first said, didn't you sign a law that says that you shouldn't do this? Yep. Okay, well, Daniel, and you've got to appreciate in verse 13 this accusation that they bring. You know, he's one of the exiles of Judah, not he's one of our commissioners. He's accused of neglecting and not paying attention to the king, even making his petition three times a day. Oh, that we would be accused of continually serving and worshiping and obeying God. Verse 14 and 15, the king shows himself to be useless. He's put this law into effect. He's now has to hold the terrible punishment over Daniel. And now, what is the king to do but to fulfill his own law, even if he knows his law is both foolish and wicked? And that brings us to the lion's den, our third point, the lion's den against Daniel. We can follow this story here. This is some of the most riveting portions of it. There's a waiting. It keeps prolonging the story. We don't find out until the end, as we're reading for the first time, if Daniel actually lives or not in that den. The king casts Daniel into the lion's den. But notice here what he says to Daniel. And I want you to appreciate, this is not a wish. This is not merely a prayer. It's very clear in the Aramaic that this is a statement. This is an affirmation of the king. Your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you. These are the only words that a friend can bring at a time of great trial when he himself is powerless. And it is in his affirmation that he highlights the very fact that really Daniel's God is the only one who can and will rescue Daniel. One commentator again says this, God seems to say not only to Daniel but to captive Israel who are watching what's going on here, you may have rulers or others in high places who are well disposed toward you, but don't rest in them as your trump card, for even they, for all their apparent power, can prove as helpless as Samson without hair. Again, our trust is in the Lord. A stone is laid over the mouth of the den. The king seals it with his own ring. His governors seal it with their own ring. It cannot be reversed. And then the king is up all night. He can't eat. He can't sleep. He brings no entertainment before him, no distractions. He is concerned. He's fearful for his friend. Finally, day breaks, and we see the king doing something that kings rarely ever do. He runs to the lion's den. In verse 20, he yells out to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lions? It's interesting. We've been hearing about God being the Most High God, but now this language, the living God. You see, the inanimate gods cannot save, but the living God, he can save. And Daniel explains that the living God has indeed delivered him. One writer says that not only did the king fast, but so did the lions. Verse 22, my God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they did not harm me, inasmuch as I was found innocent before them. And so Daniel was taken up and out because he had trusted in his God. Or as the writer to the Hebrews says in Hebrews 11:33, by faith they stop the mouths of lions. Daniel was a representative of Israel. He was actually representing the people of God in their captivity. And Israel was to trust God and obey him even with the threat of this lion's den, because he's the God who rescues. And Daniel's victory over the king's law kept Israel from being punished for violating this decree. We'll find that the king will actually write another decree in its place. But there is a clear and sober warning here for all nations, peoples, and languages. Do not oppose God by going after his own. Do not oppose this God by attacking the church. Because it says here that the king gave orders, and he brought those men who tried to accuse Daniel, and he threw them and their children and their wives into the lion's den. They didn't even hit the bottom, they didn't hit the ground. And these lions, who had been hungry all night, devoured them. They fulfilled the words of the Psalms. They dug a pit for the anointed of God, but they fell into it instead. So here's a clear and sober warning for everyone. But there's also a clear decree from the king of Persia to you today. Do you hear what he says to all peoples and nations and men of every language? I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel. He's a living God. He endures forever. His kingdom endures forever. His dominion will be forever. He started with a foolish decree, but he ends with a faithful decree. And God is not simply referred to as the Most High God, which implies that he's higher than all other gods. He's referred to here as the Living God, which implies that he is powerfully involved with his world, with his people. God defeated the lion's den. God delivered Daniel. And here is another king like Nebuchadnezzar paying homage to the true and living God. Just as the Psalms predict, Psalm 102 verse 15 says, "The nations will fear the name of Yahweh, and all the kings of the earth your glory." The world may be against Daniel, but God is for Daniel. God is for his people. Do you hear that? God is for you. So often we walk around when we face trials and temptations, much less severe than a lion's den, and we question if God is really for us. God is for you. And here's how we can know. Because what we see in this text today is simply a foreshadowing and a picture of God's ultimate salvation for his people in Christ Jesus. And this brings me to my conclusion, which I've entitled, God is for Daniel. It says in Psalm 125 verse 1, "Those who trust in the Lord are as Mount Zion, which cannot be moved, but abides forever." And we want to be clear that there are things to commend about Daniel in this passage, but this passage especially commends the God who Daniel trusted in. Daniel 6 is foreshadowing another event, the resurrection of Jesus. Just hear the comparisons that are brought right to the surface once you have the actual historical account of Christ. He was conspired against to be arrested in stealth and killed. They could find no accusation against him, and so they used the law. His sentence was unsuccessfully spoken against by the magistrate, whether Pilate or Darius. He trusted his God, and he descended into the pit. His grave was secured by sealing a stone over it. And at the end, he was found alive, lifted out of the pit, because he was innocent. Of course, Daniel represented Israel. But Daniel could not free Israel from death. Daniel could not free Israel from her sins. But Christ could. Jesus died not for himself, but for his people, for their sins. And his resurrection is ours in him. Even here, Daniel is not the Savior of Israel. He is the saved. And Jesus was not only pictured in the life of Daniel. He is present in Daniel 6. This is before he took on human nature. But here he is as the messenger of God, shutting the mouths of the lions, just as he protected those three young men from the fires of that furnace. And in this time of relative comfort, we are called to commune with our God in prayer, in the Word, so that when crisis or conflict arise for you or I, you will have strength. You will have strengthened faith to trust in this Jesus rather than to obey man. Amen.